Blog Talk Radio.
Number 15 to all the Bams faithful out there and hardcore Bama fans. I hope you enjoy the show. We have got, of course, our esteemed co-host, our square pegs and round holes, Mr. Thomas Rockwatts. Thomas, how are you tonight?
Pretty good. I heard there was some business down in Miami. I was asleep.
Carrie Clark was at the game on media credentials, dying to talk to Carrie. Carrie, how are you tonight?
I'm just blessed.
CC Bama, I'll tell you what, man. I to be honest with you guys, and this is the only self-pointing I'll do this evening. I watched the game twice more on replay after they showed it. I didn't go to bed till 4 o'clock. I was so dadgum amped up. It was just what a total domination.
Absolutely, it was one of those things where as I'm watching the game, I'm texting friends at other schools, and I'm like, what? Are you shocked? And an LSU fan, good friend of mine, actually texted me and said, no, this is exactly like last year's, except unlike last year's game, I expected this one. So I'm still shocked, quite happily. What about you, Carrie? What did you see?
Well, I saw Beth Ball on the sidelines before the game, decked out in his Notre Dame gear.
Yeah, we saw that tweet, yeah.
Oh, gosh, I saw all kinds of things, Thomas. I saw in some what our esteemed pal Charles from Realtown would call a country boy ass whooping.
Boy. I mean, you know, I think all of us on this call expected Alabama to win, correct?
Yes.
Was there really any nervousness amongst you guys outside of just anticipation of playing the game?
Not here.
And I can speak for Blip, and I can speak for, I know, Legend as well. Heck, we've been calling this since August of last year. I mean, I had my damn tickets for the game in February of last year. So no surprise to me at all. But what was surprising was how absolutely flat, and I mean almost demoralized from the kickoff on, Notre Dame was. You guys?
Honestly, I kind of disagree. I think that Notre Dame was blindsided by a freight train that they just weren't prepared for. I think the team was ready for the game, but as it wore on, the difference got more and more pronounced. You saw ESPN commentators saying, good Lord, the safeties are taking horrendous angles. Good Lord, all these missed tackles. One of the reasons there were so many missed tackles is Lacy and Yeldon were just faster than what Notre Dame expected.
Bigger and faster. Yes, sir.
Exactly. And the play that I'm going to touch on specifically, and I'm going to actually talk about Everett Golson versus the Bama defense, and I'll probably harp on this play all night, so just prepare yourselves. It was a 3rd and 3, and Golson breaks contain and goes for the sticks and just going towards the corner. Basically, he wants to step right over the line and get a first down. C.J. Mosley beats him to the sideline, and he doesn't get a first down. And there was one of these moments where, wow, against Michigan, that's a first down. That's kind of horrifying. Go Alabama.
Go Alabama. Carrie, were you on the sideline or up in the press box?
I was on the sideline for the last 5 minutes. I don't really know how to describe what I saw. I felt like Alabama would win in convincing fashion, somewhere maybe along the lines of 24-10. I saw two touchdowns. I didn't see four. But it's like I told somebody, this is not taking anything away from Alabama, but I told anybody that would listen, there are five or six SEC teams that would do that to Notre Dame. This is a team that should have lost to Stanford and Pitt both and just pulled them out of the fire.
I'm gonna play it. You know who Mike and Mike in the Morning are, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mike Golick, you know, and he went to Notre Dame, so he's a homer for them.
His son was the starting center on Monday.
And his son was the starting center. I'm gonna play about a minute and a half clip that plays off of Kerry's statement that I think y'all are gonna enjoy. This is from their pep rally the night before.
Notre Dame is number one.
He's going in! Notre Dame has scored!
Oh, how does everybody feel? Seriously, tonight I'm not an ESPN analyst. I'm not, you know, Mike and Mike in the Morning. I'm a Notre Dame alum. I'm a former Notre Dame football player. And I'm the father of two boys that play on the best football team in the country, and that's Notre Dame! Everybody wanted to doubt us week in and week out. Notre Dame's schedule is overrated. Notre Dame's not going to win here. Notre Dame's not going to win there. Oklahoma week, we're 12-point underdogs. Everybody at my network picked Oklahoma. I told them the next day after we won, I told them all to stick it. I said, stick it every single one of you. You don't know. You don't know what Notre Dame's about. You don't know that Notre Dame is back at this point and what they're doing. This team, gang, let me tell you, they are so focused. I've been with this team every single week. Every week. Seeing their preparation. Seeing their focus. And now it's time to put it all together one more time against the baddest conference in all the land. The SEC. I don't know why we're even here. I do know why we're here. You know why we're here? To kick their ass.
That plays off of what Kerry just said. What were the teams you mentioned that they might be behind Kerry?
I think the five that would definitely beat them would be Alabama, LSU, South Carolina, Georgia, and Texas A&M. I think that Florida could possibly beat them, but Florida showed me in their bowl game that they might or might not be able to hang with the Irish.
Now,
six maybe.
I'm going to add a seventh one to that. And I hate to do this cross-referencing thing that people do, you know, well, we played so-and-so, and there's the comparative analysis and all that. I think Ole Miss would have kicked their ass at the end of the year. Because Ole Miss took triple overtime and touchdown Jesus for Notre Dame to beat Pitt. And Ole Miss beat Pitt like an ugly redheaded child. Not just red-haired, but ugly redheaded child. So, you know what, guys? I got to tell you. I think Vanderbilt would have given Notre Dame all they could stand. I was not impressed.
I wasn't either. The first thing that kind of clued me into how bad this could be was when Brian Kelly starts calling people for how to handle the run-up to the game. And it was slow. Notre Dame looked slow on offense and defense. Now, you want to talk about costing a guy some money? Let's talk about Manti Te'o. Manti Te'o, most decorated linebacker in history, had 10 total tackles, but most of them were half tackles where he jumped on the pile. Manti Te'o, who whiffed on the 20-yard touchdown for Eddie Lacy. I am not talking about Manti Te'o the individual. Manti Te'o the individual was stand up. You know, if I had a daughter, I would be totally okay with Manti Te'o and my daughter getting together and doing whatever it is they do. But as a football player, once Alabama's offensive line started mauling that D-line, and particularly after Capron Lewis-Moore went out, it was just avalanche. It was game over. So, just, oh, man. I can't – there's so much I want to say because I was so impressed. It was just a great night. I said it in chat. If you're not in chat, join us. If you want to get in and tell us your story of who you watched the game with, give us a call at 714-510 3707. I know we're going to be going on this almost all night, so I think I'm actually going to kick it to Kerry because he was actually at the game. I was just watching and losing my voice. So, Kerry, you know, what else you got for us this evening?
I don't really know where to start. I was honored and privileged to be at the game because, as I said last week on this show, it was a matchup of the top two traditions in the history of college football, bar none. But I tell you what, I knew there was a separation between the two teams talent-wise. And I thought 14, maybe 17, Alabama would win by. I never foresaw Alabama winning by 28 points. I probably should have, but I didn't. I thought that the fact that Notre Dame was 12-0 would allow them to stay in the game until middle third, maybe early fourth. The game was over after the first play of the second quarter when it became 21-0. It was over. I told the people for me, hey, it's done. I don't really know what, you know, I was a student in Alabama in the 70s, as I said before, late 70s, early 80s. But I was in school for two national championships in a three-year span. And only politics prevented him from being three in a row. Alabama should have won the 77 championship, but because of George Wallace and other reasons, the media decided to vote them out and vote Notre Dame ahead of them. I was not really following football when Alabama got hosed in 1966 when the media decided to reward a Notre Dame team that had tied Michigan State and did not play in a bowl over an undefeated and bowl victorious Alabama team. I was not really following sports at that time. I was more into things like Batman and Spider-Man and Frankenstein and Dracula and all those kind of stupid things. But anyway, I was very much a part of 77, 78, and 79, which, as a student, should have been three championships. So ended up being one split and one unanimous. But, you know, but we're back to that era again and in a tougher circumstance. And by the way, I don't know if you guys have been following Twitter, but it looks like the Philadelphia Eagles are trying to steal Brian Kelly from Notre Dame. They couldn't get their first choice, Chip Kelly, so it looks like they are making a move on Brian Kelly. People are already making comments about him being processed, but he's not officially accepted the job yet. But back to the game.
How would that is.
It was just domination. It was boys against men. It's interesting that Thomas brought up Manti Te'o and a gentleman who had missed two tackles all year and equaled that mark in the first half.
In the first quarter.
First quarter. And I think he missed a few more after that, but he did have 10, but I think he missed maybe four. But the thing is, there were NFL players, Berg and Thomas, there were NFL players tweeting about this, and they were saying things like, well, we've heard about this guy all year. We've never been sold on him. We think he's a practice squad player in the NFL.
Yeah. Ouch.
That was brutal. I don't believe that. I think he's a backup type linebacker in the NFL. I know that there's some teams in the NFL that have linebackers on their payroll that are probably worse players than Manti Te'o. That were kind of being harsh. Let's see. What else? I don't think we should spend a lot of time on this show talking about the Musburger and AJ's girlfriend thing. That was way overblown, way overhyped. It was a very minor thing. But, you know, I was kind of blown away by the amount of celebrities there. I stood and tweeted a picture of Vince Vaughn as Berg mentioned. I did not see John Bon Jovi, but one of my cohorts did, also decked out in Notre Dame gear. I didn't see Regis, but I'm told he was there. But of those three, if I had to pick one, it probably would be Vince Vaughn. I was impressed that he was pretty much the same height as me. I'm 6'4". He's either 6'4 or 6'5". But he was decked out head to toe in Irish gear. Something else that struck me, when they took a break on the pregame game day, guys, when Lou Holtz walked in front of the Notre Dame section and they were chanting his name, it put into my mind, you know, what if Paul Bryant had lived 15 or 20 more years? You know, would ESPN have used him in this kind of manner? I don't know. I don't think Coach Bryant would have been down with that. But it was just because, you know, Lou Holtz is an icon at Notre Dame. And he moronically picked him to win. But I think deep down in his heart he probably knew better because he's watched film and he's a coach. And but he has to live up to the hype of, you know, having been a Notre Dame guy and blah, blah, blah. But it was pretty cool seeing those guys. It was – was cool seeing Urban Meyer and Coach Sumlin from A&M doing their deal pregame. Walked by that for a while. Saw Governor Bentley chatting with Mount Bowen, Paul Feinbaum. It was definitely the place to be. It was a lot of fun. Ate at a couple of pretty cool restaurants. Took a brief walk on the beach. Didn't have a lot of time for that. I had a lot of fun in media day. That was my first time to go face-to-face with Amari Cooper and T.J. Yeldon due to the rules in place with Nick Saban. But they were open, season that day, and I got to talk to them for a long time. I don't even know what else to say. It was just a tremendous experience and one that I was privileged to be a part of. And, you know, I don't know. With that, I'll open it up to the floor if anybody has any questions.
Absolutely, Kerry. But actually, I think we're going to take a quick break, and we have King Crimson on the line. So, Bert, if you will shoot us off to break. You are listening to BAMS Radio. It is 8:15 on a Wednesday night. Lines are open if you want to join us. It is 714-510-3707. We will be right back for more of this national championship talk thing that Bama won on Monday.
Banter.
It is different. I think back to 1970 when we played the number one team in the nation, Texas. We weren't supposed to beat them because they were that good a football team. They had been number one. They had won a national title. I was the runner-up to the Heisman Trophy. Manti Te'o was the runner-up to the Heisman Trophy. An award, by the way, he deserved to win. Just because we're quarterbacks doesn't make that award an offensive award. And I see so many similarities between what's going to transpire on Monday night. A team that nobody cared about in August, the University of Notre Dame, pshaw. Who are they? What are they going to do? Let's talk about LSU. Let's talk about Alabama. Let's talk about A&M. Let's talk about Florida. Let's talk about all those schools in the SEC. We're here to serve notice. To all of you that may be listening wherever you might be, we agree the SEC is a great conference, but we're going to show you what an independent looks like on Monday night.
Wow.
The bird is everywhere. Locker room, pep rallies, recording all this good stuff, and you know, I don't know about you guys, but this is turning back the clock, you know, one day and listening to the rhetoric of all the bull crap that I got to listen to for the previous week and a half from the media. King, you're on with us. Favorite caller, brother. Give it to me, Bo.
I got so many things I want to say.
You got
first
all night.
First off, Mike Golic. I think y'all need to join a conference. I would suggest the Sun Belt or Conference USA. Okay? All right? That's what I'm saying. And look, they did what they had to do to get to the game. They won. On paper, it looks good. You got USC and all that on there. But these are not the same teams we're used to knowing. There's two styles of football being played. There's a style in the SEC and a caliber and a standard. I do not know what's going on 500 miles up north. I can't tell you what they're doing because, hey, I'm sorry. Their size is kind of close to us. They got some good guys. They got talented guys. They played football all their life. I don't know what it is. I can put my finger on it that I've watched that football game three times. And I saw a level of intensity. The Hawaiian didn't show up because by the time he was making a read, there was a Stinson about 3 inches off the ground shooting through and knocking his butt back 3 feet, taking him out. You can't arm tackle us. The holes were nothing but people sticking their arms out because it was getting blocked. They got blocked. It was a clinic. And, yeah, their stats look good on paper, just like Texas looked on paper. You know, the Legion of Doom, Hell, they don't even throw the ball. They don't even throw the ball in the Big 12. I mean, they run the ball in the Big 12. So, you know, it was just reading. I mean, it's like everything was misleading. And I bought into it. I thought, actually, I was thinking like a 17-10, we get in there, duke it out kind of game and pull it out. You know, I was thinking that. But what happened in that game was, let me tell you something. When Alabama takes that stage, I have never in my life seen a team that wants it, is ready to execute. They know it's go time. This is what it's all about. We're going to do it. We're not going to be denied. And I saw that, man, and it was so impressive. Lacy played at a different level. He kicked it up a notch. You can't deny that. Everybody did. And, for, you know, we could have put 60 points on these guys, but we felt sorry for them. I guarantee you that. And I listened to the BS from all the Notre Dame people. I didn't say a whole lot. Don't want to say a whole lot. Really don't want to say a whole lot now. But if they start crying this ref crap to me, I'm sorry. Do I think the punt call was kind of squirrely, the interference? Yeah. Yeah. It could have went either way, man. But they called it. They reviewed it. They looked at it. That's the way the game's played. Let me talk about the Hawaiian.
Yeah, baby.
Preach on, brother. Have I ever seen a human interest story translated into a stack of awards? And I'm talking feel-good shit here. Let me tell you something, man. That guy did not show up. He did not show up. When the ball went flying over his head, bloop, on the touchdown throw, first touchdown, hey, he said, we got in his head. And if I could ask one question, if I ever had the chance to run up to this individual, I would ask him one question. Where did you get the vines that you wore at the Heisman show? Okay? You had a bunch of shit hanging off your neck. Down to the floor, vines going down your back. You had lays on, you had vines. Did you get them in New York? Did you take them out of a planter? Were they shipped from Hawaii? That's stuff I want to ask him because he damn sure ain't a football player. I'm through preaching, y'all. I love it.
Now,
I love
you know,
it. Roll Tide.
I'll tell you, King, Roll Tide. What he is a walking billboard for Adidas cleats now because he's got cleat marks up his back, up his front, on his face. Alabama, and this, and I'm not being figurative on this, literally ran over that boy's ass the whole game. I mean, stomped on him.
They come up with a new stat. He was standing near a tackle three times, okay? He
yeah.
wasn't in on nothing. And what about Mr. Yeldon introducing him to the ankle breaker? Fourth down, he charges through. I'm going to be the hero and beat my chest. Little 19-year-old boy just went, boop, and left him standing in his tracks. That was beautiful. That was beautiful.
The whole game was amazing, and I'm like you, King. I don't care if they had reversed both of those calls and they'd gone against us because, you know, I'm a football fan. I know what's right is right, and I'm going to be a homer first. But by the same token, hey, if the call is not right, make the right call. I don't want to win that way. And you and I are not sitting up in the booth. Of course, the Irish faithful were not sitting up in the booth. They had, you know, the director of the NCAA replay people, that guy. The best of the best were at this game. The best of the best were at this game. They called it like they saw it after looking at it, you know. So, that you know, I don't want to hear any. And did you guys catch the after-the-game interviews that ESPN put on from the Notre Dame guys? Anybody listen to those?
I listened to the post-game press conference, and I do want to say Notre Dame got their season functionally destroyed after about 10 minutes on Monday night. And to a man, their players were gracious and complimentary.
Until, did you catch what they said, Thomas?
I don't know what you're going for here.
I know. I'm in my little zone here, but I'm going to tell you what I heard from every single one of them. Tonight, they were the better team.
Oh yeah, the Lewis Nix.
Every one of them, every single guy. They Golson, Tayo, Nix.
They were a better team.
that Monday they were that Alabama was a better team on Monday than Notre Dame. Let me tell the world right now, you could put that same bunch of boys on the field, men, 365 days a year, okay? And we would beat that ass 365. And I'll take it one step further. Put all of them plus half the green-wearing pussies that went down to that thing, big mouth son of a bitches, that got and put them on the field too. You know, you Notre Dame fans, get out there with your team, and you still wouldn't be able to beat Saban, Alabama, and the Crimson Tide.
The biggest joke.
It ain't
all
bragging
of those.
If you can back it up, guys. It's not bragging if you can back it up. And let me say this: it's the world against the SEC.
It is
the world against the SEC now. That hatred. They despise us. They think we're the whatever fanatical cornbread trailer living whatever. And you saw what I said on Twitter. Yeah, Boba Homers against Go Domers. Hey, I say the Crimson Tiders against the pedophiles. Deal with that. Am I right? Yes.
That's kind of what I said.
Let's look into the future.
Yeah.
Let's look into the future. Okay. I got a gut. With the talent we got coming in, and I'm just thinking about 7-on-7, AJ and Amari, and all these great receivers we got going on. We're gonna do it again. I think we're gonna do it again. And I'm sorry.
Do you remember last year?
We're seeing history. It don't get no better than this. I've said this on this show a dozen times. Don't get no better.
Nope.
Saban's a machine. He's got a plan. He's got a process. We just need to jump up, back up, let him do what the heck he wants to and support him. And I'm calling now, if we got a grain of salt in our body and we're worth a flip, we're going to fill that stadium up down there and show some appreciation because that's a great recruiting tool. That's great for our kid. We don't need 38,000. We're going to be, hey, guys, we back to back. Let's put 100 in that thing. I think we need to do that.
Let's make
blow
it
out spring again.
102.5. How about that, King? Isn't that where the thing sits?
Well, I'm sorry. And let me tell you something. I talked to my dad. The first thing I know, well, I didn't like the way it is whipping that ball around on us. Daddy, people do actually make plays against us sometimes. And we're spoiled. And you better enjoy it. You better cherish every second of this, because right now you are living in the heyday. I lived through the Barry Bright years. I come up a kid. I couldn't even remember when we lost. But I remember in 1973, my granddaddy carried my tail up when I was 9 years old because we got beat, and I cried. He tore my tail up. You don't cry before I was in Alabama. So I've held that a long time. And any mojo, them leprechauns, and them clover-carrying SOBs up there in South Bend has got on us, they in the ground now, Hoss. We the king. I love y'all. Good show.
Roll Tide, King, man. Thanks for that call. And as always, King Crimson brings the lumber on the BAMS program. Love hearing him talk. But I'm going to tell you, this show is going to evolve into some fun stuff as we go along. I'm not ready to go to break yet, guys. Kerry, you want to comment on anything the King said?
Well, I couldn't disagree with anything that he said. It is a dynasty, and it's only going to get better. There's no signs of anything slacking up. Saban's just a workaholic when it comes to recruiting and scheming and, hiring coaches. He added a new coach today to his staff, Greg
Brown.
Who
was Kerry? I didn't catch that. Who was it?
His name is Greg Brown. He's a veteran coach. He's coached in the pros. He's coached at Colorado most recently as defensive coordinator. He's 55 years old, but still said to be a good recruiter. He was officially added today. Ted Fluker officially declared for the NFL. There'll be an official announcement for the university Friday about the status of him, along with D. Milner, who's expected to go, and Eddie Lacy, who's expected to go. It looks like they're only going to lose three of the five that I was worried about when I came on the show, I guess back in July. I said there was five I was concerned might leave. It looks like only three are going to leave. It can't be expressed in words how big a deal it is that C.J. Mosley and A.J. McCarron are coming back for their senior years.
Yes, sir.
The best quarterback in the country – the best linebacker in the country and a top three to four quarterback in the country. So, yeah, there'll be some retooling going on the offensive line, obviously. But there's a plan in place for that. We probably don't talk enough on the show about the great job Jeff Stoutland has done with that offensive line. I've followed Alabama football since, I guess, the mid-70s, and we had some pretty good offensive lines under Paul Bryant, and we even had one good offensive line under Mike DeBose but in 99, but I haven't seen one like this. This offensive line blew people out, created huge holes. Approximately a third of the running plays Alabama ran this year, the back wasn't touched until he was 5 yards past the hole. That's domination. A.J., the hardest hit A.J. took Monday night was from Barrett. And Notre Dame didn't touch him.
Thomas.
Him and Barrett quickly kissed and made up. I was somewhat squirming and squeamish when the event occurred. They quickly kissed and made up, and
it's just because it's a new day, Kerry, and we're comfortable with ourselves and our manhood, and that's all fine. Thomas, your 2 cents.
Well, on the offensive line, there's going to be some retooling, but I'm going to echo what Kerry said about if we're going to go into next year. C.J. Mosley is him coming back is huge. It'll give the linebackers that guy to rally around. And A.J. McCarron, I mean, come on. He only has 3 national championship rings. A funny meme that has been going around the internet is Nick Saban sitting at his post-game press conference and says, "Hey, Auburn, my seniors have more national championships than you." So, you know, that's just something to make you think. But let's talk specifically about the future, and I'm going to go a little all over the place here, so just bear with me.
Let's if we can, let's break it real quick. We've got callers on hold,
sure.
And let's not leave them out. And I'm gonna, and you're gonna love this clip, guys. This will crack you up, Thomas. If you can screen that caller for us, we're gonna take this show right to break. Real quick, 1 minute. We'll be right back. Shout out. We'll give the sponsors a shout out in a second. We're just having fun tonight. You are listening to BAMS Radio. Love to hear from you. 714-510-3707. We'll be right back. Well, if I can get my board to work.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your mind, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy, 'cause it's easy come, easy go, little high, little low, anywhere the wind blows doesn't really matter to me.
Brought to you right from the back seat of Dade County's finest squad car. That is a very, very drunk Irish fan trying to commiserate and talk his way out of going to jail for being a little inebriated from his beloved Notre Dame. It looks like we have got Amy on with us. Amy, welcome to BAMS. What can you tell
us? Hey, guys.
Roll Tide.
I just got back yesterday morning from a great trip to Miami.
I'm so jealous. Number one. Is this your first BCS, or have you been to other BCS games?
No, this was just a fabulous gift from my parents for Christmas. So my husband and I got to go down. We were so excited. We went to the Bama Bash the night before and just had an absolute ball. It was just the trip of a lifetime.
What's the Bama Bash all about, Amy?
The Bama Bash is something, I'm not actually sure, I think different sponsors put it on every year. It's usually, I think, at a conference center. I'm not sure how many years they've done it, but it was at the Miami Beach Conference Center, and we got VIP tickets to a lovely dinner beforehand, and they had all kinds of special guests. Gene Stallings spoke. Trent Richardson gave a great speech. So the whole dinner was just speaker after speaker, former players. Some of the local media from Birmingham were there, and just kind of getting everybody pumped up for the game. But what was so awesome about the dinner was they weren't just talking about football. Every single speaker that they had come, especially the players, talked about just the camaraderie and the family that comes out of the Alabama football team. It was really inspiring, and by the time we left, we just couldn't wait for Monday to get there.
And talk about the atmosphere, you know. Let's talk about the different fan bases, because I mean, you know, you were of course in the middle of the Alabama fan base, but you had some exposure to the Notre Dame folks. What was that like?
Well, we actually stayed in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm not sure if it was just the times that we were out, but it seems like there were so many more Notre Dame fans where we were. And to be honest, the climate was just completely different. You know, if we came across an Alabama fan, because, of course, everybody out during the day is just decked out in their colors. You know, I must have said Roll Tide 300 times during the day. You know, people would wave from their hotel, or if they were outside at a restaurant, they'd say Roll Tide. And, you know, I'm a cordial person. I would try to say hello or good morning to everybody we walked by. And, you know, they just wouldn't even look you in the eye, or just, you know, just kind of had this chip on their shoulder. And I understood, you know, the competition, but it was just ugly right from the get-go. I'll be honest.
What happened at halftime that pissed you off? Something about the bands?
yeah, I think I told that story before, but you know, Notre Dame, I mean, both schools are so rich in tradition, and they have this amazing, huge band, and we had a bunch of fans behind us, and it was pretty obvious that, you know, by that point, the game was, you know, not in their favor, and they just started going off about how bad our band sucked and how great theirs was, and theirs just put our band to shame. And I turned around and I said, okay, I'll give you that. If your band needs to be better than ours tonight, then so be it. It was funny.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like it was a great time. Great Alabama fans, thank you for calling the show tonight. Any last parting shots? What's your prediction for next year, 2000, you know, our 13 campaign rolling into the championship of 14? What do you think?
Well, this being my first BCS championship to go to, my husband and I both agreed that it was the time of our life, and we've never been so proud to be Alabama fans, and we can't wait to go back and fully intend to.
We'll roll tide to that. Well, thank you for calling BAMS
roll
tonight.
Roll tide, guys.
Yeah,
thanks,
man, that's awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem.
Appreciate it. Take care.
It's not every week we get a former Miss University of Alabama on our show.
I didn't give her props, but that's actually my daughter, and she got to go in my stead, and she was, by the way, very proud of the fact that she was Miss University of Alabama during her time down there, and then went on to compete in the Miss Alabama pageant, which is part of the Miss America. And by the way, it's so funny because we promised we weren't going to beat this up, but the AJ's girlfriend, she wasn't part of the Miss Alabama like we know it. She was part of the Miss USA Alabama thing, and trust me, there's a huge disparity between the two programs, and every time they would show that, Mrs. Bird would just go ballistic. You know, she's not just absolutely take off on it. So it was.
All those pageant moms. What are you going to do with them?
What are you going to do? That just hit. She's really not a pageant mom, but holy cow, we got another caller on, guys. Do we want to put this one on? You guys got some?
Yeah, let's let them. Yeah, let's bring them.
And I'll tell you what's coming across Twitter now is I just got a tweet from one of the listeners. Want to know if we could replay that. I guess it was the Mike Golic pep rally piece. So we'll get those on, and I'll do five.
Why don't we hold that to Legend Island?
I'll do that right before.
I
Legend.
Do have one more bit of coaching news before we take the call, Bird. Burton Burns was contacted, and Jimbo tried to steal him right after the game, and Burton Burns announced today that he is staying in Alabama, running back coach.
You know, it's amazing for Saban to be such a purported asshole how long some of these guys stay with him as coaches.
You say that, Bird, but of the group he brought in 07, there's two left.
Okay, but that's 6 years ago.
But no, but yeah, I know. But there's some turnover, but they never miss a step, is my point.
It's and Kerry, you're right. I mean, and that goes to the team itself. He doesn't rebuild, he reloads. He reloads
in the coaching staff. I mean, he has to have the most amazing coaching candidate Rolodex of anybody in America.
He's amazing, period. I mean, I've got a man crush on him, and I've been unabashed about that, but just his preparation, and King nailed it too, and I think you guys have alluded to it, and I know Legend said this too, and Blip as well, that we are spoiled. I mean, it's this is a dynasty, like something. You know, I've grown up a Yankee fan. I like the Lakers and watch the Lakers with their dynasties. And this is a different thing. What I'm watching right now over the past 4 years with what Alabama has accomplished and the mentality and the mindset of the kids that are coming to Alabama. And I saw this last year whenever we listened to the interviews. And I know, Kerry, you were down there, I think, when the commits and the early signees were coming in and the kids were enrolling early. And you listen to them interview these kids, and they sounded like they were like 3 and 4 year veterans. They didn't sound like they were seniors in high school transitioning to college. And I think it's a mindset. I think it's the kind of kid. And in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but didn't Saban allude to on the show on one of the after the game interviews he did that this team surprised him. They overachieved.
Yeah, that was said. I mean, Saban's been pretty consistent saying 2010 was his most talented team, and last year was excellent. But this year, in his mind, the team overachieved just because. I mean, think about what was lost from the 2011 team. You know, all those first round picks, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And yes, Alabama's defense this year was not as good as last year's, but it was damn close. So that's what Saban meant by that.
They didn't have as much maybe, and again, I do that with a lot of question marks, maybe individual talent as the team last year had, but they, and again, it's something we've been preaching here on BAMS for the past, 12 weeks, or actually 15, 18 weeks now. The best team defense. These guys were absolutely remarkable as a team defense, and the schemes and the setups. It's if you like football and you like defense, trust me, there will be coaches all over the United States taking the Bama film from the past 3 and 4 years and doing nothing and saying, what are these guys doing that's different?
Absolutely. It's not that. To hit on your team defense point, it's not that Alabama is doing that much different. Yes, the blitz packages are very complex. They're very difficult to read. One of the funniest things that you saw from the game on Monday was Everett Golson would look to the sideline, yell check, 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 and then Alabama would shift. I can only imagine knowing that Everett Golson basically has to put this game on his shoulders and win it. He's trying to run plays. He's trying to shift out of what he sees as a bad read. And then right after he does it, the entire Alabama defense then immediately shifts into an even worse-looking defense for what he just called. That's absolute team defense. That is the people that can read what the offense is doing, the C.J. Mosleys or the Robert Lesters, reading what the offense is going to do and adjusting properly. And the way Alabama can do that on the fly, you simply that's the best way to put it. If you want to beat Alabama, you have to out-prepare Nick Saban, which, think about what I just said and then just laugh, because it's not going to happen but once in a blue moon. Soapbox off for a little while. Sorry, guys.
Do we still have a call to wait?
It's Robert, and we'll put him on in just a little bit. Yes, and Robert, hang with us. But I want you guys to get say your piece. And I heard you interject a minute there, or just a moment ago, Kerry. You got it.
Oh, I was interjecting because I lost Thomas for about 10 seconds, and I was wondering if we're still on. But I can see now that we are. To add a little bit on to your comment earlier about the reload, there's a very big recruiting weekend coming up, 10, 11, 12 guys, and every one of them coming in Friday, that will be there till Sunday, is ranked in the ESPN top 300 senior in the country. So there's not any scrubs being recruited right now by the University of Alabama. And Alabama had some recruits that performed well in some national all-star games over the weekend. I was able to see a little bit of Derrick Henry's game. Robert Foster exceptionally in the game he played in. All of the people that were expected to enroll yesterday did so, with one exception.
Who?
Probably after the game, FSU was able to flip DeMarcus Walker over to them.
Really? Okay. That surprised me.
Because of the story that I told on the air last week about DeMarcus moving with his mom.
Right.
Saban was able to convince him not to visit Florida, and that worked. But then he turned around and enrolled at Florida State, mainly because the coach his mom, who he's now living with, wanted him to stay in state.
That's fine.
Who was most familiar with on our staff was Jeremy Pruitt. And he really didn't think he had a great relationship with the other coaches. He had a good relationship with Saban and Smart, both, but he had a great relationship with Pruitt. That combined with him moving from dad's home to his mom's home cost Alabama DeMarcus Walker. But other defensive linemen are starting to show interest now that there's a national championship crystal once again residing in Tuscaloosa. So as stinging as that was, very briefly, because Alabama needs good pass rushers, there's a bunch of other ones on the horizon that are showing an interest. Big recruiting weekend. I don't know if Saban will choose to bring the guys to the basketball game the way things are going there. I don't want to really talk much about that. But
not tonight. Next week. We'll get into
it. We'll
get
next week. But what I was saying was, a lot of times recruits are brought to the basketball game for a half or so. I don't know if that'd be the case this week when they play Tennessee at noon Saturday. That's all I really want to say about this week, was there might be some recruits at the game. So it never hurts to give them a big roll tide if you see one. There's 10 or 12 guys coming in, and they're all – very, very highly ranked guys. So looks to be another top two or three, maybe even number one, finish in recruiting. It really couldn't get any better right now as far as Alabama football goes. I really don't know what else to say other than roll tide, and roll tide.
Well, you know, you're bringing up recruiting. I do kind of want to talk about next year. I have said – I'm not sure I've said it on this show, but I've said it in discussions off the air, that once the schedule was released for next year, I looked at it and was like, I'm not one for blanket statements, but I'm going to make one, and I'll hold myself to it and eat crow if I'm wrong, but Alabama's going to go undefeated through the regular season next year. The schedule sets up in such a way that it is absolutely unbelievable to me. Yes, I understand Alabama will have some losses, but think about this. Alabama has everyone, because of a fluky schedule,
You mean personnel losses?
Yeah, personnel losses.
Okay.
I apologize. Because of a fluky calendar, every team has two bye weeks. Well, if you haven't seen Alabama's schedule, Alabama has a bye week, week two. Whoa, that's really early, you're saying to me. Why do they have a bye week really early? I don't know why they have a bye week really early, but it's right before Texas A&M, who Alabama will travel to play in week three.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
And another big deal with the Texas A&M game, Luke Jockel, the number one rated offensive tackle in the country, who beat out Barrett Jones for the Outland Trophy, just announced he's going pro. Couple that with the fact that Demontre Moore, maybe the best defensive end in the SEC, also played for A&M, going pro. Matthews, I think his name is Jake Matthews, the other offensive tackle for Texas A&M, may go pro. Oh, and the guy that got no hype for Texas A&M and might have been as good as either of them, was their center, whose name escapes me. He only came in and started every game he was ever on campus for. So Texas A&M, yes, Johnny Manziel is a fabulous football player, but there's going to be some rebuilding, and they catch Alabama early. I think that's going to be a huge game, obviously me and every other analyst out there. But then let's look further down in the schedule. Alabama does not have Florida, does not have Georgia, does not have South Carolina. Okay, so they missed the three big killers out of the East. Well, then, astute fans would say, when does Alabama play LSU? Alabama's other bye week, when LSU is coming to Tuscaloosa, is the week before Alabama plays LSU.
Wow.
Wow.
So the two biggest games of the year projected right now, Alabama has a bye week before. Now, I, again, I've got a lot of friends that go to LSU just because I lived down in that area when I went to school at Tulane. But have you seen how many people are leaving LSU early?
Yes.
It's like 10 people leaving early. Their entire defensive line is done. It's crazy. If Les Miles can pull together an 11 or 12 win season, he should run away with Coach of the Year, because it is a brutal turnover for the Tigers this year.
Now, I'm going to counterpunch you a little bit. I'm going to tell you right now that I think maybe the toughest team we play next year is going to be Ole Miss.
I could see that.
Have you kept up with their recruiting, Thomas and Kerry? I mean, Kimdichie's going to go there, and I can almost guarantee he's not going. He's going with his brother. He will be he's like Jadeveon Clowney. He'll be an impact player from day one. And some of the other names I've seen that are saying, yeah, I think I'm going to go to Ole Miss because of Hugh Freeze. He has put together a terrific program in Oxford. Not only does he have a terrific program, now he's starting to put players around that program. So I'll shoot a flare, guys. Watch that game very carefully.
I completely agree with you. I think that Ole Miss has a chance to be that surprise team.
Not even a surprise. Bird is calling it now, so if it's a surprise, y'all ain't listening.
Well, they still have a quarterback, Bird.
Well, you know what?
EOS.
I think what will happen, Kerry,
it'd be a walk-on at Tuscaloosa.
That's, you know what, but between now and then, Freeze has been able to work some magic. He'll pick up somebody out of the JUCO ranks or a fairly highly touted kid. It's like with LT Tenpenny. If you look at what's in front of you in the running back cores, I don't see LT coming to Alabama. I see him staying at home with Belima in Arkansas. Kerry, you know more about this than I do. What do you think about LT Tenpenny?
There's no indication at all that he's not going anywhere but Alabama.
Really? Okay. Well, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm not saying something can't happen by signing day, but there's no indication right now.
Well,
In fact, there's an indication that Kamara is coming to Bama to join Tenpenny.
You're kidding me. Wow.
Kamara, on his own dime, came to Miami to watch the game and watch a few practices.
Wow.
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 So, yeah, wow. So even if Tenpenny does defect at the last second, Kamara is now put Alabama ahead of Georgia on his list. So they're going to bring in three good running backs or four. So there's no indication Tenpenny plans to flip. Kamara is open to playing running back or slot receiver.
There's no indication. Because he's a tall kid too, isn't he? I mean, he's about 6'1" or something?
No, he's about 5'10".
Okay, so he's not tall. Yeah. All right.
No, the tall guy's
that's why it's squat.
We haven't even touched on. I mean, Derrick Henry. It's very interesting reading everything coming out of the Army All America game, which Henry played in and excelled. To a man on Rivals, the analysts were just like, "Wow, that kid's a monster. I can't believe he can do athletically what I watched him do throughout the week." That kid, I know we've harped on him a lot, but I'm going to harp on him a little more. Derrick Henry could be really, really special at Alabama.
It's the Burton Burns thing, guys, is absolutely huge. I had we can't get the coaches on the air because it's verboten, but off the record, every once in a while I'm able to talk to one of these guys. And I'll reiterate the story that I told you, I think, first part of the season. We went just – I mean, this is back in A-Day. And we knew Lacey was going to be absolutely a terrific fill-in, and we had Fowler and DeHart, and you know, it was all starting to come together. And I asked, you know, Coach Burns, I said, you know, you've had Glenn Coffey, you've had Mark Ingram, now Trent, and this year Eddie, you know, how good is Yeldon? And he looked at me and he said, there is, every once in a while you get that kid in your program. He says, TJ is that kid. And I shuddered. I thought, oh, my Lord. And guess what? He had a 1,000-yard year. You know, it was in getting probably what? How many less carries than Eddie would get in a game? 15 maybe? He's unbelievable. And this is before he does another year, another offseason of weightlifting and strength and conditioning under Scott. Guys, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Roll Tide, roll. Wow.
It's a fun problem to have.
Sure. Yeah. And Henry, I think Henry could come out of the spring as high as number two in the running back rotation.
Kerry, you're going to have to stick your finger in the wall, brother. You're breaking up. Go, quit making a sandwich.
I think Henry could come out of spring as high as number two in the running back rotation.
Oh, I agree with you. I think I got Henry could come out as high as number two from that. He's not going to pass T.J. Yeldon, but I could see him. I honestly expect him to be a solid number two just because Fowler will still be rehabbing his injury. Now, it'll be real interesting going into fall camp as Alabama prepares for Virginia Tech in week one. That backup for Yeldon is going to be an absolute war between principally Jalston Fowler and Derrick Henry. And I frankly don't know who's going to win that. I think Fowler, if you want to talk about huge losses, Alabama doesn't lose to anybody if Jalston Fowler stays healthy this entire year. I think he was that big a deal because it was a lot different in terms of play calling because the I formation took such a massive hit. Again, I'm nitpicking what was an excellent season, so please don't take it as me complaining. I'm just trying to underscore that Jalston Fowler is still a hoss in the backfield.
Oh, I love Jalston. He's you know, one of my favorite running backs to ever touch the ball with Alabama and just hasn't gotten to carry it a whole lot. But it's like watching an aircraft carrier, you know, go through the ocean. I mean, once it starts rolling, ain't nothing going to stop it. He's amazing. He's just amazing. Let me ask you guys something. We're gonna, you know, we got Legend Island coming up. We got 3 or 4 minutes before we head over to the island, and we got. By the way, folks, we got Danny Sheridan coming on tonight. Looking forward to having the count of all good in the state of Alabama because he counts better than anybody else. Danny with us to get his impressions of the game. But I ordered, and I know this just sounds as stupid as it gets, but I ordered one of those dopey championship rings today off of eBay. Now, just call me out in front of everybody, all the different listeners. How queer was that? But I don't care. I got one. You can make fun of me. I don't care.
If it makes you happy.
I'm
jealous.
I like your money. Your call, buddy.
Yeah, you know, God bless both of you. You don't have to be nice, but you know, I used to make fun of the Auburn fans when they would order when they ordered that one ring, and I thought, you know what, I don't care. And boy, can I have fun with Auburn after we come back from the break? And by the way, from Twitter, let's see what was the tweet question here. I put my glasses on, guys. We're getting questions in off of Twitter and the comment from Twitter was. Good thing that the Ole Miss game is that we get him at home again next year. So I didn't realize that. And again, thanks, BSB from Twitter, for giving us that heads up. And
that's a great point. That was a fluke of the schedule, too. And that adds further fuel to the fire that Thomas ignited tonight about the undefeated season. I'm not disputing really what you're saying about Ole Miss, Bird, but Pitt's not really a very strong opponent to give somebody props for beating the hell out of. Pitt, frankly, didn't belong in a bowl game. That said, Ole Miss did look good. They do have good players. They've got good recruits coming in, but they don't have the caliber of players Alabama has, Bird.
Not yet. But I would keep an eye on them.
They're never going to have the depth Alabama has. There may come a day when they can match the first 22 in 4 or 5 years, but they're never going to have the depth Alabama has. And Alabama's got C.J. Mosley and A.J. McCarron at home against Ole Miss. So I'm going to
– Yeah.
Sure, they'll put up a fight. Look, they put up a great fight this past year.
Yep.
They're probably, and I'm agreeing with you on this aspect, Bird,
they probably hit Alabama harder than anybody in 14 games hit Alabama.
Yep. Yep.
As far as tackling and blocking and all that. They brought it. They were ready. But depth is such a big deal in college football. And, you know, sure, they're going to get Kandichi, but probably his best bowl experience in the 3-year season here is going to be something like the Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
So, and for Ole Miss, that's a good thing.
It is. Well, you know what? It's if anything, I think what we're seeing is the with Murray coming back to Georgia, which surprises me, by the way. And I don't want to get into Danny and the island time, but boy, we could talk about a whole lot tonight, couldn't we? By the way, we got another request through Twitter. Actually, a couple of requests to replay the Mike Golic Irish pep rally bit that we did coming out. So we're going to play Theismann and Golic back-to-back. Actually, I'll start with Golic, and then it'll roll right into Theismann. We've got about a 3-minute break ahead of us. And then we're going to roll right into Legend Island with the King, Danny Sheridan, and the Preacher, the legend. So you're listening to BAMS Radio. Appreciate it tonight. Enjoy this BCS Championship special. And here's Mike Golic at the pep rally.
Notre Dame is number one.
Notre Dame with a miracle win.
He's going in. Notre Dame is scoring.
Oh, how does everybody feel? Seriously, tonight I'm not an ESPN analyst. I'm not, you know, Mike in the morning. I'm a Notre Dame alum. I'm a former Notre Dame football player. And I'm the father of two boys that play on the best football team in the country, and that's Notre Dame. Everybody wanted to doubt us week in and week out. Notre Dame's schedule is overrated. Notre Dame's not going to win here. Notre Dame's not going to win there. Oklahoma week, we're 12-point underdogs. Everybody at my network picked Oklahoma. I told them the next day after we won, I told them all to stick it. I said, stick it, every single one of you. You don't know. You don't know what Notre Dame's about. You don't know that Notre Dame is back at this point and what they're doing. This team, gang, let me tell you, they are so focused. I've been with this team every single week. Every week. Seeing their preparation. Seeing their focus. And now it's time to put it all together one more time against the baddest conference in all the land. The SEC. I don't know why we're even here. I do know why we're here. You know why we're here? To kick their ass. That's why we're here. It is different. I think back to 1970 when we played the number one team in the nation, Texas. We weren't supposed to beat them because they were that good a football team. They had been number one. They had won a national title. I was the runner-up to the Heisman Trophy. Manti Te'o was the runner-up to the Heisman Trophy. An award, by the way, he deserved to win. Just because we're quarterbacks doesn't make that award an offensive award. And I see so many similarities between what's going to transpire on Monday night. A team that nobody cared about in August, the University of Notre Dame, pshaw. Who are they? What are they going to do? Let's talk about LSU. Let's talk about Alabama. Let's talk about A&M. Let's talk about Florida. Let's talk about all those schools in the SEC. We're here to serve notice to all of you that may be listening wherever you might be. We agree the SEC is a great conference, but we're going to show you what an independent looks like on Monday night.
Welcome back, and now you have got the true craziness of the planet about to hit you. You have got the legend on Legend Island, and we are thrilled to bring Danny Sheridan on to BAMS again this evening. Gentlemen, welcome. Legend, I'm doing the handoff to you, baby. It's yours.
Thank you, Bird. Honored to be on BAMS tonight. Honored to have Danny with us. Welcome, everyone, to the show. You know what time it is. Number 15, baby. We celebrating it big on the island tonight. Let's welcome the godfather of Southern sports, the man, the myth, a legend himself, Mr. Danny Shadden. Welcome, Danny, to the show tonight, brother.
Well, I have one question for you. Was my friend Mike Golic and my good friend Joe Theismann, were they on the same thing that I saw you were on when I was with you in Tuscaloosa in October? That mind-altering drug.
Ouch! That was the night before the game, Danny. That was at their pep rally.
They both have great on-camera presence and on-camera presence in front of a mic, and that was really inspiring to listen to them. And you talk about eating crow. Hell, I'd go in the witness protection program, the WPP, after that speech.
Dan, let's get your breakdown of the game. How did you see it, and did you call it right?
Well, I got lucky and called it right. I picked Alabama to win. I missed the total, Logan. I thought legend it would be like under 41 or under 40. But you can't get them all right. If I have to pick one and miss one, I'd rather get the game right. But I felt Alabama, I think I said they would, to my clients, I thought they'd win by anywhere from 17 to 21. I never dreamed that they would manhandle Notre Dame. I did tweet about an hour before the game that I predicted that Alabama's receivers would be open all game. It's just whether the quarterback could get it to them. But, I mean, wide open. And they were, it looked like they came out early to practice. And I just tweeted a little while ago that I think it was said earlier and during the game or after the game that the best lick of the night, Monday night on A.J. McCarron, was delivered by Barrett Jones. But I have never in college football, I'm excluding, Alabama, if they played Kentucky or, whomever. I don't think that, you've watched every game this season. And I don't think that I've ever seen Alabama receivers running wide open in the middle, deep, behind the secondary. I mean, they were just like wide open all night. Offensive line is the best in college football. It's the best I've seen in 30 years. Nebraska offensive line in the 70s, they won 3 out of 4 national championship titles. I'd say Nebraska's offensive line probably is good. And I don't say this, you'll think it's funny or you'll think I'm joking, but I say it tongue-in-cheek. It is true. Nebraska's offensive line were on steroids, and they really had a hell of an offensive line. This team's not on steroids. So all in all, Alabama's probably what we saw was the best offensive line that in the history of college football. I can't go into the 40s and 50s like my deceased friend Beano Cook, but certainly the best in my lifetime.
You know, when you watch this team, the word dynasty is thrown around quite a bit. Do you now see Alabama as a dynasty, a team capable of pulling a John Wooden UCLA run like we've seen out of the Bruins in the 70s in college basketball?
Well, I think they won, if you're talking about 10 or 8 in a row, no, I don't see that happening. But I said when he got there, knowing his pedigree, and Alabama was in shambles, I got lucky and said, I said it at LSU, he'd win one in 5 years, and I think he won in 4. At Alabama, I said he would win a national championship in his 3rd year and probably might win 1 or 2 more, depending on how long he stayed. I had no idea they'd be this successful, and I'll be shocked if he doesn't. Let's see, how old is Saban? About 60 years old?
Yes, sir.
And I figure he can coach. He's a healthy guy. You're looking at a guy that go into his mid-60s, late-60s, probably coach till he's about 67, 8, 9, somewhere in there. Spurrier is 68. He's probably in as good a shape or better shape than Coach Spurrier. Based on what I've seen, I'll be very surprised. It's very unfair to say it, but he's won 4. Coach Bryant, what is 6? Is that right?
Yep.
Yes.
I mean, it'd be very unfair to say, but I'll be surprised if Saban doesn't win at least 7, and he's won 4. I'm not talking about winning one this coming year. He'll be favored to. It's a good schedule. Might win one, but I could see him easily winning 2 or 3 if he coaches till about 68 or 69 years old. I'd be surprised if he didn't win that many. And I'm basing it on not the euphoria of last year or the last, but of the since he arrived. It's just a program stocked full of NFL talent. And that's good, but the most important thing is you have to get those kids to believe, and And you have to get them to be focused. No doubt they're good athletes. I mean, hell, Georgia's got great athletes. So does South Carolina. So does LSU. But can you get them focused every week like this guy? I don't think so. I never saw a team, not just this team, but since he's been there, I just like the way his teams play. And they play more focused than they did when they were at LSU, when he was at LSU.
A lot of people talking today that Nick Saban could go down as the greatest coach of all time. Would you now consider that a possibility after last night?
Oh, it's definitely a possibility. I had a possibility before last night. And, again, remember, things fell right this year. You had to have a lot of upsets. You had to have a 21-point favorite Oregon lose to Stanford. That's a pretty big thing, Luke. I mean, you tell me, legend, that is a monster thing for that to happen. You go back to last year, the impossible happened, or the improbable. Iowa State, 27-point underdogs, upsetting Oklahoma State. And there was one more upset in there that I can't remember which other team lost. But if that doesn't happen, you don't get a chance to see this greatness. And the reason why I think you're going to get to really see the SEC stand out is, ironically, the other leagues have had enough of the SEC, so they decided after Alabama, LSU, that's it, you're going to have a four-team playoff. What they basically did, assuming things continue like they've continued, programs like South Carolina, LSU, you know, Texas A&M is now in the conference, Florida, let's don't forget Florida and Georgia and Alabama, assuming these programs continue to improve or just stay at the same level, you're going to have four teams in the playoffs, legend, and two of them, probably three, but certainly two, are going to be from the SEC starting in 2014. So, hell, Conference liable to retire the trophy. They may give them a green jacket and give them an exemption every year.
I heard somebody say the other day, on New Year's, they're going to start dropping crystal balls. The way they dropped the big ball in New York, they're going to start dropping crystal balls in Tuscaloosa.
I wouldn't doubt that. I had a good line, you know, the three toughest conferences, without a doubt, three toughest football conferences in the country in alphabetical order are the AFC, the NFC, and the SEC. It's funny, but you'd agree with it. Hell, I'd agree with it.
Yeah.
I'm writing that down. I'm stealing that for the radio.
Hey, in case they invite me back to speak to Tuscaloosa for the third year in a row, don't be taking my material.
Hey, you talk about the SEC, this dominating run now of seven straight championships. Is this the greatest run by any conference in the history of the game? And do you see it slowing down? Is there a team out there that can derail this runaway train called the SEC?
Well, that's just not the team. Is there a conference? And no, I don't see it slowing down. I mean, I think it's reasonable to assume, and you stop me, y'all stop me if you think I'm wrong. We already know about, you know, the strength of this conference, the Georgias. Florida's going to be unbelievable next year. Georgia will be okay. They're not going to be terrible. LSU's going to be damn good. And my question to you, of course, Alabama's going to be damn good. Is it reasonable to assume that Tennessee's going to be better, Auburn's going to be better, Arkansas's going to be better? And I probably left out, you know, somebody. But my point is, and Missouri will probably be a little bit better. My point is they're going to get better. The conference is going to get better. The teams at the top are going to continue to stay at the same level or get better. I don't see anybody catching them. Yeah, you'll have a team like Ohio State. You know, they bring everybody back. They were undefeated this year. And by the way, Ohio State would have gotten their ass beat if they'd played Alabama or if they'd played Georgia. It wouldn't have mattered. Ohio State is probably a little bit better than Notre Dame, not much better. And next year, they think they're going to go undefeated. They should. They won't. They won't have a chance. I think Ohio State, until they beat Arkansas, I guess two or three Sugar Bowls ago, and that was with five suspended players who they didn't suspend until the following season. That was the first time, and correct me if I'm wrong, that was the first time that Ohio State had beaten an SEC team in a bowl game in like 9 or 10 years. So Ohio State's the cream of the crop, and you'll have, you know, a couple of good teams. Texas is going to be pretty good next year. But if you're talking about conference strength, I don't see these guys catching up to them, you know, maybe in the year 2020.
By the way, Danny, every time Nick Saban was mentioned with Urban Meyer on as one of the panelists, I think he was getting chest pains there on ESPN.
Well, either that or diarrhea. I'm not sure which
one. He may have been having both.
He's just lucky he got out when he got. He inherited a wonderful team, and he's inherited. Lucky him. He's got a great team at Michigan. He didn't put it together. Braxton Mitchell's a Heisman. Braxton Miller's a Heisman Trophy candidate. He's his quarterback. This will be his second year. After about 3 or 4 years, the jig will be up. The dance will be up there, and you'll get to see. Michigan will dominate him, but it just takes a while. He inherits it. Lucky him. As soon as these recruits graduate, he can bring all the recruits in he wants. He won't compete with Brady Hoke, but that's another story. He can't compete in this conference. The timing was right. I can't think of many coaches. I don't know of any that can coach that could not have coached the two teams he had at Florida. I mean, and then get Tim Tebow thrown in your lap and Ron Zook's players for about 3 years. But, hey, he's not a bad coach, but he's not what people think he is. He can't put a program together like Saban or anybody like that. And I think Michigan's going to dominate him, but we'll see.
Danny, you think this four-team playoff, you mentioned it, it's really custom-built for the SEC. Do you see this four-team playoff revolutionize college football and maybe backfiring on the nation? It probably will end up Alabama and LSU every year.
Well, it depends on if they try to shade the rules because, you know, Alabama, whether they like it or not, Alabama and LSU have to play each other every year, and somebody's got to obviously lose. And I don't know how I don't know how the rules will shake out, whether they go to some stupid rule like a conference champion, because that could really screw it up, because then you'd have a mighty team like Cincinnati from the Big East or the Big East or somebody like that, or Pittsburgh.
Northern Illinois.
Well, Northern Illinois they're not one of the five BCS teams, but Northern Illinois is a pretty darn good team. But
they were, but for them to go to the Orange Bowl, Danny, it blew my mind. It was like, that's not the marquee or the matchup, because growing up, you know, you had your Big Four on New Year's Day, and it was just, you know, it was always a real, real compendium of great teams.
Nice.
And not to denigrate at all Northern Illinois or their accomplishments, but you know, Orange Bowl and that team, it just doesn't compute to me. And the other thing is too. I mean, gosh, I got so much to ask you, because I don't for the life of me understand how Charlie Strong could be passed over in the SEC as a head coach. I would love to see Charlie Strong from Louisville as a head coach in the SEC, but whatever.
No, that's true, and he's done a nice job. But this is going to sound like not complimentary. He's a great coach, but I got to tell you, I mean, I love Louisville, but if you think for one second that if I thought Florida cared about that game, Florida was cranked to play Oklahoma.
Yeah.
This is their reward, an 11-1 team ranked, what, I don't know, 3 in the country. Their reward is to play a team that's not ranked 25th. Louisville's very good, and they'll get ranked in the top 10, but they're not in the same league with Florida, and I love Louisville getting 14, thought they'd win the game because Florida did not care. Just like they didn't care for 4 weeks after they lost to Georgia, but they did care when they went to Florida State. And might add, Florida State's pretty good, and Florida State's one of your top 10 teams. But again, that's my take on that. And, you know, you can't I know it makes a lot of Louisville fans. They can believe whatever they want. I mean, that's what I do for a living. I'm not smarter than them. But I know I said that LSU, who's much better than Clemson, would lose to them because they don't care. I said that Georgia would lose to Nebraska. They did not, and they covered. They were losing, I think, by 8 in the fourth quarter, middle of the fourth quarter. But they won. And I said that Michigan would beat South Carolina. And South Carolina's superior to them. And I think South Carolina won on the last play, just a fluke 30-yard touchdown pass by the backup quarterback, who's pretty good. But there's a reason why I said that. It's not because I'm smart. It's because they don't give a rat's ass about playing those teams. And those are four of my top bowl picks, four of my seven top, and I won 3 out of 4.
Kind of like Alabama and Utah in 2010.
Well, that was exactly. I picked Utah. I loved Utah that game. And you understand why in retrospect.
Yep. Yep.
Alabama would kill Utah if it mattered. And those teams, if they got hold of those teams in the regular season, LSU, look, you're LSU. You just beat Florida. You just beat South Carolina. South Carolina, the last game of the season, peppered Clemson at Clemson. How in the hell are you going to get up for Clemson, and what do you gain if you beat them? So they screwed around and still should have beaten them. South Carolina screwed around and should have lost to Michigan, but they didn't. Georgia really screwed around, if you saw the game, because they didn't care. They saw Nebraska on film losing 70-30 to Wisconsin. How are you going to get your boys up for that? Anyway,
yeah.
So when people say the SEC is not strong, they're, I can't use the word on this wonderful, polite, politically correct show, but they're out of their effing mind. This conference is sensational. Well, effing could be friggin'. It could be a lot of things. It could be foolish.
Yeah, fire trucking, too. Guys, we've
got think about the teams that are down now,
right.
The Tennessees and the Auburns. You know what's going to happen. They're going to get better, and so is the rest of the conference, and that's scary.
This is a fun time to be a college football fan, and I don't care what colors you choose to wear on your back. If you're not excited about the season coming up for your team in the SEC, then there's something wrong with you, because this conference, the way it's shaping up with the coaches, the way it's shaping up with the kids that are coming in with the talent, and we do a pretty good job of keeping up with the 4- and 5-star kids and where they're going and what school, and trust me, it's a bounty of riches of talent coming into the league this year. It is just an exciting time. Now, Legend, I've got a couple of callers.
I got to interrupt you. You said this is an exciting time to be a college football fan. You left out the word, a Southeastern Conference college football fan.
Right.
The rest of them are not too excited. They're waiting for basketball season.
You're right. No, I absolutely stand corrected and agree with you. It's to be an SEC fan, this is a special time for sports. For if you like,
I know one thing. If you had told me that the conference would win 3 in a row or 4 in a row, this is why I don't bet. I'd have bet you anything. If you told me 7 in a row, forget about it. And if you were telling me now they're going to win 10 in a row, I'd do just the opposite. I wouldn't bet you because they might win 10 in a row.
Yeah.
Unless they change the rules.
After a while, you start following the dice on the craps table. Legend, we've got a couple of callers that have been holding for a while. If you and Danny will allow, we can continue on with just us on the call, or if you would like to take a couple of callers, I've got a couple of people waiting to talk to you.
I can't speak.
Danny, mind talking to a few folks?
Take any call.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan Burr.
All right, man. Well, we got Robert on, and haven't heard from him in a couple of weeks, so just love to talk to Robert. So, Robert, you're on with us, baby. What you got for Legend and for Danny?
Oh, okay. On 2013 for Alabama, I see Alabama going all the way. So, what do you think about that, Danny Sheridan?
I think they'll be favored every game, and they'll have two tough games, Robert. Texas A&M, they get a two-week break after they pop Virginia Tech the first game. They'll beat A&M at College Station, and the only tough game they'll have is at home against LSU. But, yes, I think Alabama's favored to win the whole thing, and I would put Oregon next, probably LSU and Ohio State because they don't play anyone. But, yeah, Alabama's loaded, Robert. And, Robert, I got to ask you the most important question. Are you still doing that pissant radio show, Paul Feinbaum?
I'll let you know.
That was not nice on my part. I apologize to you, Robert.
I know, but I want you to know, 2013, are we going to be that kinder, Johnny Derrickson and that kinder Paul Feinbaum?
2013, I told Feinbaum's handlers, Robert, that in 2013, after taking a self-imposed year off of his show, I will probably, if he asks me back on, I told his handlers, I will probably come on starting in maybe May or June. I may come back on, but if he lets one or two callers on there, the one or two that I don't know what their names are, but then I may have to self-impose more penalties. But, yes, I'm going to come back on the show. You can give him the good news.
He's Johnny Terrigan. I want you to know, Johnny Terrigan, if anybody bullshit you at Paul Feinbaum, then direct them to me because I can strike him right.
You can put a hurting on him.
I can put a hurting on him. And Tom, if they bad talk you, man,
Thank you.
He got, I love you.
I feel his future. You tell that to Paul tomorrow or Friday when you call him. Tell him because of you, I'm going to do his show. How's that?
Yeah, because of me. Okay. Can you
because
do that
you
show because
it,
of me? Because I really want you to be on there.
Thank you. Now, a lot of people have said that. I'm very flattered by that. And I will do the show if his handlers.
No matter what Paul Feinbaum say, I want you to be on there.
Well, let me say this, Robert. Paul doesn't say anything bad about me. It's one or two of these nut jobs that make up all this stuff. But I will do the show because you asked me. And if he wants me to come on, I'll do the show. It'll be my pleasure. But I got to tell you, if Legend asked me and Paul asked me, I'm doing Legend show first.
Oh man. I'm sure that pick a Legend funny bone.
Legend pays me. Paul won't pay me to be on the
show. Ah, there you go.
there you go.
Robert, as always, man, it's great to hear from you. And
Robert, you take care.
I love you guys.
Robert,
take care.
You stay well, Robert. I'll talk to you on Paul's show.
Well, next up, we've got Marty, our good buddy up from around Gadsden. Marty, you're on with Legend and with the godfather of all sports, Danny Sheridan.
Hey, Legend. Hey, Danny. It's a privilege to be able to talk with you on the radio.
Privilege is mine, Marty.
I got three questions, and if I understand if you don't have time to answer all of them.
I've got time. I just don't know if I have the brain power to remember all three, but go ahead.
Well, the first one is, you know, we've seen the mismatch the Notre Dame and Alabama game was. I'm wondering if it was just a mismatch. Or you know how Alabama played the first of the year? When they was fresh, free of injuries, they just looked so dominant in the first few games. Then I think they started getting wore down a little bit and hurt and banged up. Is this are we taking it for granted that Notre Dame was that bad, or was Alabama fresh, ready, prepared, and still beat a halfway decent Notre Dame team and made them look bad?
No, I think that Alabama and the top dogs in the conference are just superior football programs. I don't say they got superior coaching, but when you count coaching and recruiting, this is just a tough conference. And the only team that I think that could hold their own against Alabama would be an SEC team like that night, like Georgia again or LSU. And the only team outside of the conference that would have a chance against Alabama or the top teams in the conference would be Oregon, and Oregon would never get the ball. They would play a very good game, but when they got it, they would move the ball. But their offense would be getting blisters on their butts because they'd be sitting on the bench watching the Alabama offense methodically move down the field with an offensive line that you don't get to see unless you play pro football. So, no, I just think that the talent level, I don't think it had anything to do with injuries, just the talent level, just superior to Notre Dame, and they could have beaten them worse.
Yeah, I agree. Second question, too.
I mean, let me say this to you. Those receivers were so wide open, and I say this sort of jest, but it's true. Legend and I would have been open with all the time that McCarron had. Offensive line just manhandled Notre Dame. I don't say I would have caught the ball. I wouldn't, but he would have gotten the ball to me. And that, when you do something like that, that is total dominance, and that's what these SEC teams would do in a big game. And the only team they couldn't really push around this year would be a team like Oregon. You could score on them because you keep their offense off the field, but Alabama would have beaten Oregon probably, I don't know, 10 to 14 points at the most.
Well, the second thing having to do with the four-game playoffs coming up in 2014, you've seen all this media bias and all the northern power that they put pressure on the media and all how they lean towards Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, so on. When they determine this four-game playoff, isn't there a committee that's going to actually have the final say of the position of those teams? And
that concerns me, Marty. I mean,
that concerns me big time because we've seen this, what the product they put on the field for the BCS championship, just destroyed the ratings at the end because it was such a one-sided game. That really worries me. I didn't know if I was correct on that or not.
Well, it could, we'll have to wait and see how it shakes out. But, yeah, that's the only thing that bothers me is will they put in some stupid rule to prevent Alabama and Georgia from playing after they have a sensational SEC championship game? Will they just throw Georgia to the sideline and say, well, they didn't win their conference? Well, if you do that, you're not getting the best four teams in the country. And the same with Florida and the scenario this year. If you had done it this year, I would have had, if you wanted to be fair, I would have had, look at the ratings, look at the BCS standings. I think, what, three SEC teams in the top four or five? I would have plugged them all in. So I don't know the final say-so, but unfortunately, the bad news is it will be decided by a committee. The good news is they got to pick four teams, not two. That means one or two SEC teams won't have to worry about 21-point Oregon losing at home to Stanford. So that's the good part about it.
Okay. The last thing is the Hawaiian from Notre Dame, the T.O., I call him Tutu. Do we really feel
– I don't think I would say that to his face, Marty.
No, I'm way away in Alabama. I don't think he can find me, hopefully. But you know, one thing about the awards he received, and you know, I watched that that night when they was giving out those awards, and I just got plumb sick to see what they was doing to that particular one person. And, you know, and a lot of it was they kept bringing up the sympathy thing of his girlfriend dying, his grandmother dying. You know, do you think you should decorate a player that's supposed to be one of the best defensive football players that put on a uniform in college football? You know, just because of sympathy, and he's a Hawaiian, and those circumstances. That concerns me, too. That goes back to the media.
I think there are politically correct people. If I were voting, I would vote on ability. He is a very good football player, and he is a class act, and he's a bright kid. And do I know if he's the best defensive player in the country? Do I think he is? No. I probably wouldn't vote for him, but I certainly wouldn't vote with those attributes that you mentioned. There's nothing wrong with that. But, no, it's supposed to be, you know, a guy like Barrett Jones who's played not only three positions. He won the Outland Trophy. I don't know the other two trophies. For the three positions he played, and he played them well. It's not just that he played three positions on the offensive line. A guy like that, to me, is worth more, obviously, and he did win the award. Nationwide, I would think they're better players defensively, but, Marty, as you know, you stand out like a sore thumb if you're on a team that's 12-0, and then if you magnify that and you're on a team that has their own television network, NBC, you're on every week and you hear, oh, he's the greatest, and he is an excellent player and a good kid, but that helps. That's, you know, part of the political process. That's why I hate the Heisman voting because it's so political, and I was glad to see Johnny Football Manziel win the Heisman because he damn well deserved it, and I was worried that they were going to do the sympathy vote for a defensive player. But life is not fair. Anyway,
well,
gentlemen, I got to run. I got to try to win some pro games this week because I lost my top pick last week in the pros, and I blame it on Legend, but that's another story.
Can we get one more question in? Boss, can we get one more question in?
I'll
we got
any question you want.
Rock Watts is one of our co-hosts is just itching. So, Rock, you got him.
Well,
quick.
Yeah, but let me say this. Anybody with the name Rock, the first name, the names when I know people that I know named Rock or Rocky, as Legend will tell you, they're my bodyguards. They're pretty good-sized guys, so I'll answer any question with a guy named Rock.
There you go.
Big guys. Kind of look like a Rock, too.
Looks like me and you, Legend.
No, I wouldn't say it. It looks like me and you, but with muscle.
a lot of muscle between the ears.
Go ahead, Rock.
Danny, this is Thomas. I've met the pleasure of meeting you a couple of times. My nickname's Rock. But anyway, my question.
Hold up. Thomas is the Rock Bird.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Thomas. I love you, brother. I love you, man. I had a picture of the Rock, the wrestler, here for a minute. But, all right, go ahead, Thomas.
No, I know it's really early, but given how Alabama's schedule sets up next year, have you had a chance to really break down anything? I know, like you said, you're busy with the program, and I'm focused on that myself. But I'm curious, looking ahead now that Nick Saban has won another one, how do you see next season shaping up?
Well, schedule shapes up great, and it doesn't matter. They'll be favored in every game. I don't think Virginia Tech's that good. A&M, I guess, concerns me a little bit. If I remember right, they're going to lose some key offensive linemen, and they're going to lose a few guys on defense. Their defense was average anyway, at least I think it was, or is, was last year. But the season shaping up, the only team that I think that stands a real good chance of beating Alabama is their nemesis, LSU. And you can't overlook an SEC schedule. I don't care how bad Tennessee was last year or Auburn, but the answer to your question is the only game, and I don't know what I'll say and whether I get it right or not. This year I think I said they'd lose one game, and they did. I think they'll lose one game next year and still may play for the national championship. And I say that because when you play in this conference, you're supposed to lose a game. It's just too much to ask. But on paper, the only team I see, again, is LSU. They play, let's see, eight defensive linemen. They rotate them, and they're going to lose Mingo and Montgomery, who are being the pros. But they got two studs behind them. So LSU is pretty formidable. They get them in Tuscaloosa. As you know, Thomas, Tuscaloosa is not – when they play LSU in Tuscaloosa, there's not any big home field advantage. And when they go to LSU, it's not a home field advantage for LSU. So I would say there's really no one on the schedule. The only team that can beat Alabama in the other 11 games would be Alabama. In the LSU game, I think it'll be a little bit tough. They get by LSU, it's possible, but they probably won't lose the game. But I do see them slipping up. This is early. In fact, I'm going to take that prediction back. I want to wait till August and I've seen everything. But I can say, look at the damn conference and look at the top boys in the conference, and every one of them lost a game that they weren't supposed to lose. It happens.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on with us. I do have one other small thing. Who do you have this week in the NFL playoffs?
Well, I'm probably, first of all, yeah, I'm going to tell you that, Thomas, and my clients are going to sue me for about $1 million. I can't release my picks.
Well,
but I can tell
there.
You this. I'll tell you, last week, I only count my top picks. My top pick was Cincinnati. Lost by 4 because that fine quarterback couldn't hit a touchdown pass, a wide open receiver. But I lost Cincinnati. And ironically, I won my other three other picks, but I picked what I call small picks, 50-50 opinion, and I got all three of them right, three favorites, but I lost Cincinnati. This weekend, I love two underdogs, and we'll see if I get lucky and get them right, two of the four. But I'm not going to tell you which one unless you want to pony up, and, well, you can't. My service is full, but if you want to join me next year, we'll be fair. And I know that you wouldn't tell anybody, and I know no one's listening if I were to say I like XYZ. I'd hear about it on Twitter in a nanosecond. Anyway, I appreciate you asking me that, but I think the underdogs, some of them this weekend, are way overvalued, and I think probably went outright. But we'll see.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
No, thank you. Colleges are great to me this year. Had a sensational year. Did great in the bowls. I was 6-1 on my top picks, and I don't think I had a losing weekend in the colleges. I had two pushes, which I guess you could say losing. But the pros beat my little butt this year. It was tough. I think I might be a few games above the winning mark, but it was really tough. And now I'm 0-1 in the playoffs and see what I can do this weekend. But got this weekend and next weekend in the Super Bowl. And whatever I do beats working for a living, trust me. Appreciate you having me on, and sorry I got to go, but I got to run. I actually have to go read some newspapers and try to get ready for the pros this week.
Hey, Danny, we appreciate you coming on tonight. Me, Bird, Thomas, we love you here on BAMS. The BAM Nation loves you. You are the godfather of Southern sports. Yeah,
I think I'm the godfather
so
because you know that I have mafioso connections. I think that's why I'm the godfather. I don't know about that other stuff.
Well, I don't want to offend you. I done met your bodyguards. They let me know it's best not to.
It's big bang. When those guys stand up, you tell me if I'm wrong. They're built like yield signs. And when they stand up, it blocks the sun out. You think it's a total eclipse.
Yep, that's a fact, my friend. Hey, we love you. And
thank you. It's a pleasure being on. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, Danny.
Take care, Bama. See you later. Bye-bye.
All right, guys.
Well, legend, I'll tell you what, that was, number one, a great segment. I love listening to Danny. That's one of those that I can kind of lean back and put my feet up on the desk in here in the studio and just let you guys have that. So what a fun piece of the show. Have we got phone lines open, Thomas?
We do have phone lines open. You could come straight on with us. Give us a call at 714-510-3707. I figure now Legend's probably going to get rolling about the game. You know, I hope
yeah, we haven't heard from him really, not yet. I am dying, and I mean literally dying to get his take. And before, as he's taking his 5 minute inhale breath to give us his 10 minutes exhale, going to ramble off some sponsors that have been with us this year, and many, many thanks to the guys. Number one, good friend Billy at Sunbelt Inflatable Tents. Yeah. Billy, you are the king. Man, I'll tell you that I still am amazed at the comments that we get for the BAMS tailgate setup. Good friends down at Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the guys down at Work Play, Levy's Jewelers, help me, Legend, help me, help me, help me.
Bob's Bikes,
the Donut Guys,
Joe's Donut Joe. I mean, and we thank all of y'all.
We've been off
a few weeks and everything, but we're gonna catch up with the sponsors and get them out there like we said. And man, we just thank all y'all sponsors. Y'all been great this year, and the future is huge with BAMS Radio, I can tell you now.
Having a ball, and we appreciate your participation, and hopefully the we've been able to send some business your way because it's a reciprocity. I know I've talked to a lot of people that have said, yeah, we went down to Atlantic, or we did such and such and ran over to Levy's or whatever, that I know personally that have said that, you know, because they're lined up and sponsoring the show, that it's they are getting hopefully some good business from. All right, brother. Let's cut through the business side of things. Me and Rocka got you to the Bird and Rocka got you to ourselves. So, well, hell, we got callers coming on again. Let's take a caller, and then we've got 20 minutes left in the show. I need to get some unabridged legends. So let's Rock. Who do you have? Who is this?
It's actually a new caller, nice lady named Lynn. Lynn, I just got off the phone screening you, and you are actually now live on the radio. You are live with Bird, I'm Thomas, and Legend somewhere in this crazy island, probably serving margaritas or something. What you got for us this evening?
Hey, guys. Hey, this is Lynn, and I know Calhoun. Hey, this is I just saw on Facebook about how to get on and listen to the radio show, and we've been listening, and just want to tell you that it's real good. We enjoy listening to it.
Well, thank you so much for that. Yeah, this is our labor of love, and so you can tell it's all about Bama. We don't, we'll talk about other teams, but when you'd cut us, the blood is absolutely the color of crimson. We're
our white blood cell is way up.
I know. I don't think I've ever seen you in anything other than crimson T-shirts and shorts or gray or something to do in nothing but Alabama.
Yeah, it's I have one great passion in life besides the redhead that I'm married to, and it's Alabama, really sports in the program. I mean, I'm a very proud father of. I don't have a college degree, Lynn. And I attended Memphis State for about 12 years, not to get a degree, but I'm being a bit facetious. But both of my children graduated from Alabama, and my son ran the radio station, and he is actually Blip on this show. And then my daughter was the Miss University of Alabama. They both came out with terrific degrees, with a terrific education. And I'd loved the program since I've been a little boy and used to watch it on black and white TV and listen to Keith Jackson call the games. And so, yeah, I'm a Sidewalk alumni, but I'm a very proud Sidewalk alumni, and I love me some Crimson Tide. But thank you for the compliment.
Yeah, you're welcome. And we're enjoying listening to the show. So y'all were calling for callers. I don't have anything constructive to discuss.
Well, did you, Lynn, watch the game?
Well, yeah.
Well, what did you think?
Well, I could relax after the first couple of touchdowns.
There you go.
I always get real nervous because I don't want them to lose, of course. But once they got pretty far ahead, I was a little more comfortable. And I was kind of shocked there in the fourth quarter you know, when I saw the Jones McCarron thing, and I didn't quite understand it, but I did read about what happened and understand that. And but that was kind of exciting to watch. I loved it.
Yeah. I love for Barrett to turn around and basically just slap a P. Wadden out of AJ. and then on national TV say, well, I was right and he was wrong. And I mean, he just like,
I know.
I love it.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, that's our guy hitting our guy.
It was the hardest hit he took all night long was from his own offensive line.
That's right. But, yeah, we watched the game. It was great, and I'm looking forward to next year. And I already bought the T-shirt and the hat and everything to send to my son-in-law out in Wyoming. So we got to make sure to get him covered out there and represent us.
So have him call in the show. We'd love to hear from him, too, out there in cowboy country.
Yeah, I will. All right. Well, I'll let y'all get back to it, and nice talking to you, and y'all take care.
Roll Tide. Thanks for the call.
Roll Tide. Thanks.
That dead air
really
goes
cool.
To you, legend. Yeah. Anyway, now I get you all to myself unless a caller calls in. Of course, that call number is 714-510-3707. But from your perspective, I mean, you and I both have been talking about this since August, that we both knew that Alabama had the potential, and I mean the strong potential, to repeat. And but I can remember the calls. I can remember people actually calling us out saying, you're crazy. You know, look what we lost to the NFL. Look at the defense. It's decimated.
I think I said something along
those lines. I'm not going to rock. You know what?
About the rock.
I'm not going to call you out. But there have been people I'm very close to that were looking at Legend and I saying, you guys are just absolutely batshit crazy. And
well, you're still that, but you were right.
Well, okay.
Yeah, they look at me a lot like that, Bird.
What? Let me ask you about offense. Did the offense surprise you at all?
A little bit. It surprised me how effective they were, but I really thought they played their best game of the year. I mean, the potential's been there the whole time. We deem this offensive line as the best in history, and it has some great moments this year. But I heard Tim Layton say today on the Feinbaum show, he's a Sports Illustrated writer, that Alabama really didn't dominate the line of scrimmage. And I
oh,
was
what
like,
game
what
did
the
he
hell
watch?
Was he watching?
Legend, I watched the damn game three times that night. I watched it live and then twice more till 4 a.m. And, I mean, you know, you could have opened up a damn IHOP with the pancakes. Good God
I
in heaven.
What, you.
How these dumbasses. Keep going. Okay.
At one time, Eddie Lacy ran 30 yards. I think the only man that touched him was his own man. I really thought when you looked at this game, it came down to the fact that Alabama, as we have talked all year, they have four future first-round draft picks on that line. And when you look at Notre Dame, you're looking at one or two fifth-rounders. It was just a matter of talent evaluation. And this is why even early in the season, me and you could see the fact that this team was loaded with NFL talent. It's a machine, Bird. It's a machine. And here's the fun part about it. I don't see it stopping as
no.
we enter into next season. And you take a hit on the offensive line, but you still have such tremendous talent coming back to that team. Amari Cooper, T.J. Yeldon, A.J. McCarron, Cyrus, Cujo. I call him Cujo. But, I mean, C.J. Mosley. It just goes on and on and on. This team is so rich in talent right now. It really is head and shoulders above the rest of the nation. And we talked about this last week. I really didn't expect this to be a game simply for the fact of the evaluation of talent. Notre Dame just did not line up with Alabama.
No. Period.
And I'm
going to
say when this game was won, when Alabama ran down that tunnel, brother, you could see on Notre Dame's face, they were like, damn, they just keep coming.
Yeah. You know, I it's funny, but I said the same thing, Legend. I said, we won this game when we ran out the tunnel. when Nick let him out. I said that, and I looked at Brenda and I said, you know what, baby, I don't think that these guys realize what's, or they just realized what's about to hit them. And you know what her response is? You're going to love this one. Her response to me was, they look like a bunch of C-3POs running around.
Miss Burns!
Miss Burns, she was enunciating. By the way, shout out to my friend Bama Dog and Bama Dog's mama and Mandy for coming over, watching the game with us, and my buddy Michael Hunter. Had a ball with you guys. Thanks for coming to the Birdcage. And anyway, but okay, let's enough on the offense because we could spend the rest of the time talking about that. But let's talk about my favorite facet of the game, defense. Did any of that surprise you?
I thought going into the game, I had watched the Notre Dame Stanford game the night before the game, and I'll just be honest with you, I don't even know how Stanford lost that game. I'm still just shaking my head trying to figure it out. I mean, Notre Dame's offense just looked pathetic in that game. I was thinking then, there's just no way that this team is going to be able to move the ball tremendously against this defense of Alabama. I thought the defense was outstanding. I thought C.J. Mosley was just, I mean, the guy played just out of this world. And the fact that he's coming back to anchor that defense next year is just exciting to me. Him and Trey DePriest, Adrian Hubbard, Xavier Dixon.
Jeffrey Pagan.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Pagan's a beast, too.
A guy that y'all haven't brought up yet, and I think you could make an argument that Hashawn Clinton-Dix was the defensive MVP of that game. He was
everywhere
on Monday night. It
you know, you're
crazy.
Right. Ha-Ha was dishing out the punishment like he was in a bondage movie, guys. I'm telling you, man, he should have been wearing red leather and carrying a whip because he was beating some ass all night long.
And I was glad to see Ha-Ha, too, because that's a five-star player right there that's starting to fulfill his potential. I don't know if you paid attention on special teams like I did, but there was one true freshman named Mr. Collins that was showing up big in the special teams, too. He played outstanding, I thought, in special teams. It just goes, I was so impressed with the defense. I was just so impressed with the team. Every aspect of the team, they were on fire. They were ready. They understood sometimes you can lose an opportunity. They were on. They had an opportunity to seize greatness, and just like Alabama does, they seized it, brother. I mean, they took Notre Dame apart. I could just sit here and talk all night about how proud I am of this football team for what they did Monday night. It was an amazing thing to see.
It was. I've watched, you know, you and I have been around football for a long time, and I love talking to you about it because I consider you one of the better educated, not just passionate, but educated football minds that I know. And honest to God, I don't think I can remember, and I'm gonna search my archives and this, that, and the other. I do not remember a time or a team or a game, a single game that was, which should have been more equal, how badly those guys were just completely physically and mentally and technique-wise dominated. I mean dominated on both sides of the ball in every aspect of the game. And special teams, you guys brought up special teams. Same thing, all the way through from top to bottom. Now, let me throw this at you, Legend. One of the things that it's almost like Saban is a little bit surprised that this group did what they did, listening to him on some of the post-game interviews. Do you think that he expected to end up in a BCS national championship game when they started their practices in August?
This is speculation. A lot of people said this wasn't one of his better teams. Now, I don't know if I agree with that because I thought it was – maybe one of the better offensive teams I've seen at Alabama in a long time.
Maybe, yeah.
But at the same time, the great thing about Nick Saban is I think he does not sleep on his success. You know, he was talking after the game he's going to celebrate it for 48 hours, then he had to go back to work on next season.
And you know what? He wasn't joking. He wasn't saying it with a smile on his face either. In fact, right now, let's see, 10 o'clock at night, I wonder what recruit he's on the phone with, you know. Wow. It's just a special time to be an SEC football fan, one. Number two, even more special to be part of this Crimson Tide that we're riding. I mean, it's just – please, Alabama fans, savor every bloody moment of what we're doing, because there are teams across the country that are fine teams and fine programs that will never, ever, ever get to hold the crystal ball, ever. And
yeah,
this is,
I agree with you. I was watching the game. I was an Auburn fan there, and when Alabama scored the first touchdown, he said, "I got to go. I see a blowout coming." But he hung around till they scored again, and then he was saying, "Man, that whole team's on steroids. Nick Saban's on steroids. Kirby Smart's on steroids."
You should look at him, and so is every Bama fan out there, because in my case, it's the truth. I'm so amped up on steroids tonight, I'm bouncing off the damn ceiling. So,
yeah. The Water Boy's on steroids.
The Bird Boy's on steroids.
See, I have an ironic question for both of y'all. Do y'all remember when the BCS title game was competitive? Because it's been a couple of years.
Yes.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I thought Danny touched on it tonight. When they start doing this 14 playoff, I hope they keep the politics out of it, because, I mean, if you look at this season, they should have definitely been one, two, maybe even three SEC teams in a 14 playoff scenario. So,
but can I make a comment? I'll say this, Legend. Had there been a 14 playoff this year, Notre Dame would have been exposed for the fraud that they were before they ever got to the BCS championship game.
Yeah,
eventually,
I think Georgia would have took them apart. Florida would have took them apart.
A&M would have. Can you imagine that pathetic bunch of white boys trying to protect A&M? Jesus H. Christ, they would have run up. And guys, think about this. We were less than 1 foot away from being up another 14 points on them. Amari Cooper missed two passes that were end-zone-type passes by a total of 6 inches and 6 inches, 1 foot, and it could have been a 14-point game on top of what we hung on them.
Well,
what a game for Amari Cooper Monday night, too. That Auburn fan out of there, he kept saying, "Is that a true freshman? Is that a true freshman?" Yep, and that number four, he's a true freshman.
Love it. I love it. I love it. Legend, I got to tell you, I listened to a whole lot of Auburn people before the game. And of course, like Lynn said, our recent caller, she said, "Yeah, I've never seen you, Bird, that you're not wearing something crimson." Well, that's right. You know, I represent. So I go to the hardware store, and I'm going to buy, I can't remember, you know, a pipe wrench or something. And there's three or four guys standing around, and it's obvious they're all Auburn guys. And one of them says, "Well, I'm going to wear my Notre Dame stuff on Monday." I just looked at him. I said, "Well, I enjoyed your bowl game. By the way, they got your shirts on sale down here at Walmart. They're called Hanes Beefy Tees. They're all white, and they got nothing on the front of them because you didn't go to the bowl game."
I wish I could have seen that. That sounds awesome.
It's
Danny will kill me for this, but he told me earlier when I talked to him on the phone, he said he was joking with a guy today. He said it was a bad day to be an Auburn fan. Suck on that, Auburn!
And I love it. We get to kick Auburn before the end of the show. We've kind of laid off of them tonight, but, you know, again, enjoy your white bowl game jerseys, because they're going to be on sale all year long, and you can get them. I think the Zildens are like $4.99 or something like that at Sam's. You can get a three-pack of Zilden white tees, plain white Auburn bowl tees, on a special of about $15 for a pack of three.
You know what's great now is that we can begin to dig our teeth into recruiting.
Well, we are. And at that next show, that's exactly what we'll talk about. is really start breaking down the recruiting. We will talk some basketball next week. Not a lot of good things the Bird has to say, but I think there's a dose of reality for all Alabama fans. Let's see what happens Saturday. I mean, I'm guardedly hopeful that Saturday we're going to show up. But, wow, my friend, I'll tell you what, over the phone, I'm going to give high fives. Kerry's not on right now, but a high five to him. Rock, high five to you. Legend, brother, a hug and a high five. What a year. What a year for Alabama football.
It's been great, brother. It's been great. And here's the good news, Bama fans. The best is yet to be.
It's hard for me to imagine it getting any better than that Notre Dame beatdown. And I'll say this, and I know the university's thrilled. Texas has been an Alabama nemesis. They are now nothing but a notch in our belt. Notre Dame has been an Alabama nemesis for years, and they are another notch in the belt. And by the way, that's a little bit of payback because they beat us real badly in one of those times we played them, to the point that it was almost an embarrassment on our part. So, without going into a whole lot of eloquence, just very proud of this team. Overachievers, yes, they were overachievers. But Legend, I'll challenge you to this as well. Listen to the early commits, because they'll be on one of the guys on 24/7 or BOL, and they do a pretty good job of putting those clips on of their interviews that they do. That the kids that are early enrollees into school, and listen to the way they talk. And that's what struck me from last year. I listened to these kids as they were the freshmen coming in, early commits with their LOIs, and I looked at Mrs. Bird and I said, these guys are damn impressive. They're going to be here for four more years. They sound like seniors right now, seniors in college, not seniors from high school going into college. Not a bunch of booger-eating spazzes. They came in as grown men. That, my friends, epitomizes the type of kid that Nick Saban's recruiting for our Crimson Tide. Legend, wrap it up for me.
Brother, it's a great time to be an Alabama fan. Just to all the fans out there, to the Bama Nation, just be proud of what this team has accomplished, what this university has done. These are the glory days. Enjoy them, celebrate them, and tell the rest of the world, kiss the rings.
And I've got a crimson ass they can kiss too. Rock, anything?
These days will be remembered for a long time. Savor them. If you're a big message board fan, big recruiting weekend this weekend. If Alabama lands half of the guys that are visiting from around the country, easily the number one recruiting class. Even if Alabama only lands one or two of them, Alabama is going to be.
Our class is filled almost. I mean, I'm not really sure who they can, honest to God, go after. And this is, again, let's talk about it next show. I'm going to take us out of here with a little Paradise City from Guns N' Roses. That's where we're living, boys. Thank you for listening tonight to BAMS Radio. We will see you next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock.
BAMS Radio. BAMS Radio. The only station on the planet to give you in-depth insight to Bama football.
AG, Blip,
and the Bird. Bring the lumber.